Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the Early Education Show. We're up to episode 18. It's great to be back with you. I'm Liam.
I'm Lisa.
And I'm Leanne.
And I'm really tired. What a long week. It's felt like it's been a very long week in early childhood. How are you two feeling?
It has been a long week, but you know what? It's going to be a hot, hot, hot weekend for most of Australia. So we've just got to make it through the weekend.
We've just got
to survive. Everything will disappear out of our minds over the weekend because we'll be out of our mind with the heat.
Because our brains will have melted.
We'll forget everything. It'll be like Groundhog Day on Monday.
So we have a lot to cover this week. It's we're recording this just for everyone on Thursday night, which is the latest we've ever recorded. But we wanted to be as up to date on this as possible because it has been a crazy 2 days in particular regarding the government's early childhood reforms, the Jobs for Families package. So that's going to be our main topic of discussion tonight. And for anyone who, I guess, follows the three of us on Twitter, we'll know we all have pretty strong opinions of it. So probably buckle up, everyone. But we'll begin, as we almost do, with a bit of a news list. And we'll start with, we've got a Canberra-based one first, which I'm going to have to quickly defend. So there was an article about early childhood educators being the least qualified in Australia in Canberra. Well, this comes from the report on government services that comes out every year. The similar report and news story came out at exactly the same time last year, and it's hard to argue. Then Canberra is tricky because before the National Quality Framework, people aren't going to believe this, but there was no minimum requirement to work in early childhood whatsoever. You could literally walk in off the street, not even be studying, and work as an assistant educator. So the Canberra's had a long way to go to come ahead from that. So the only other thing I'd point out is that the people who aren't qualified but are studying, and the skills shortage in early childhood in the ACT is appalling. So most of the people, though they say they're not qualified, they are studying their Certificate 3 or the diploma. So yeah, a bit of a Canberra bashing, that one, which I guess is popular.
I think there was also on that news list, Liam, there was an interview done by someone, some educator from Canberra.
I noticed you snuck that into the news list, Lisa, and I wasn't going to talk about it. We had...
I think you did a very good interview, Liam. You looked really respectable and you sounded coherent.
Yeah, which you're saying is surprising, Lisa.
Not at all.
Yes. So we did have a brief interview with Win News, which is our local sort of Channel 9 or Channel 10. They had some big swap over Channel 10 News, just about the introduction of the Jobs for Families package earlier in the year. But we'll be talking about that a bit later on. Next one on the news list, we had a story about from Channel 10, which was kids being kids. Leanne, was this one of yours you added, or Lisa?
I put that one in. And it was talking about, I think there was something like, it was just in New South Wales, it was a New South Wales based one, and talking about the, I think it was just something like 1,700 breaches of that the regulators had found. But what I was interested in were the reporting on the number of children that were hospitalised. I always love it when these, I'll go back, because it was only 1,077 breaches, now that I've found it. But the number of children that were hospitalised was 305 children hospitalised as a result of accidents in early childhood. And I guess I just wanted to have a bit of a go about reporting on this sort of stuff, because that's actually quite low when you look at the figures in New South Wales for children that are hospitalised due to injury. And as we know, when there are things that happen in early childhood centres, that's the default. If there is something that is quite critical, is to get an ambulance there and get them to hospital. So to me, there's kind of responsible behaviour of providers.
Absolutely.
And that actually is not particularly high. And I think that we're also talking about things like asthma events using an EpiPen. Every child sort of needs to be then taken off and checked over. So I thought, well, this is actually showing that services in New South Wales have been very responsible. But when it's stacked up against the numbers in New South Wales generally, it was very low. It was a very low representation of the numbers of children that were hospitalised. So I just thought, big tick for services, rather than the misreporting on it saying children are in danger when they go to early childhood services.
Yeah, I think the other thing for me, Leanne, is that the same people who go on and on about there's too much red tape in early childhood, there's too much regulation, then gleefully turn around and go, look how many regulations they've breached, look how much red tape they've got wrong. It's just that kind of reporting infuriates me. And you're exactly right. It's poor journalism at the end of the day, which is, what's the comparison? So that's the number. But you're exactly right. What's the comparison with the state average or what happens in schools? It's poor reporting.
Yeah. And there was something like 11,000 hospitalisations of children from babies to 5 years in New South Wales altogether. I thought, well, that is a very, very low proportion of them. So yeah. I think it's always about being, you know, I hate that sensationalist stuff about accidents in early childhood centres.
Yeah. The next story, we're going to go a little further afield. So there was a story from New Zealand. This one, I might let you talk about this one, Lisa, because I think you had the funniest comment when you'd emailed it to me. Do you remember this one? This was the New Zealand mm-hmm. early education target.
No, I think this was Leanne.
Oh, Leanne again, sorry. Do you remember this one?
Yes, Lim, let me explain that you do this podcast with two L's. I can't say the short one's called Leanne because I'm as short as she is. I don't know. There's a difference between us.
So do you remember what we liked about this one, Leanne?
Well, I thought it was very funny. And sorry, you're coming back to me. You might need to edit it out so that I end up at the end of this long list. But this was in New Zealand where all of the efforts had been made to increase early childhood participation rates, and they only ended up, they didn't reach their 98% target. They only got to something like 96.8%.
Only
96. And what was your response, Lisa? You did have a funny response to this.
I think you just said failures or something.
Failures. But I think the writing of it was quite funny because it sort of presented this case where people were knocking on doors and dragging children off to early childhood centres against their will. And it was written at so many different levels saying all that money that they're pouring in and it's still not working.
They refer to it diplomatically as a coercive approach.
Yes. And I thought, I'm not really sure that children are really, you know, being coerced into attending early childhood services. But I thought that the percentage of participation was fantastic. And wouldn't it be wonderful to see that in Australia?
It would.
Yeah. And I think as well, it just sort of highlights how seriously New Zealand take that. So we're literally here in Australia laughing that, oh my God, they're only up to 96%. But that's a major news story. The education minister has had to come out and explain and try and do something. I can't imagine anything like that happening here. So the rest of the news list is going to be sort of, we're just going to summarise because it's all to do with the crazy week we've had with the government attempting to get the Jobs for Families package through the House of Reps and then to the Senate. So this made, I'd be surprised if anyone listening to this hadn't seen at least something. It's made a lot of the big news pieces over the last couple of days. We'll include links to some of the major ones, but obviously that's going to segue us into our main topics, which is, what is it? I don't know, Jobs for Families Package 2. This time it's terrible. So
I think it's the same issue.
It's more of the same.
Just like every other sequel.
It just looks worse because we were hopeful.
It's just like a sequel. So I think it has been, I think from my point of view, it looks like we've almost seen this bill being rewritten as we watch. So the attempt of the government to get this bill passed has led to some of the craziest, not only, you know, just early childhood shenanigans, but political shenanigans I could remember seeing for a while. It seemed to be literally being negotiated, being conducted on the radio or on interviews or when they happened to run into some crossbench senator. Lisa, I think you're pretty good at you're our summariser in chief, I think. Do you want to start by just as best you can? And I'm hoping you can do this for me. What's happened this week with this package?
Okay, what's happened this week, as far as I understand it, is that it was introduced, the Jobs for Families package, and sorry, I've got to give you a bit of history on this so it makes sense now. The Jobs for Families package is the government's response to the productivity inquiry, the product Tivity Inquiry was something they promised in 2013 prior to their election at that stage. They were then re-elected in, when was it, 2015, I think. And so when the Productivity Commission released their report and said, this is what we want to do with childcare, the Jobs for Families package were their response, was the government's response to it. And they responded to it and introduced this in the budget of 2015. So the package was originally introduced into the House in its own bill in 2015. And then when that didn't go through, it was introduced again in 2016. Both times the Senate went, oh, no, don't like the look of that, off to a Senate inquiry, and it never went any further. The main reason why it didn't go any further was because the government was insisting that we could only have the additional money for childcare, for early education and care, sorry, if also cuts were made to family tax benefits to pay for the childcare increases. And so both times the Senate said, no, not interested. So what they've done this week is they've introduced it a third time. Third time lucky, perhaps? Who knows? So it was introduced the third time, but this time they bundled it up with a whole heap of other things, the family tax cuts and some other welfare measures, and called it an omnibus bill. And I think the reason they did that was, A, to cut debate down upon all the measures, but because if Labor doesn't support it, which it looks like they won't support it, they can say Labor is holding up the childcare bill. Whereas Labor is kind of really saying, no, we're having problems with the family tax benefits. Does that make sense?
Perfect.
Very good, Lisa.
But then what happened today is the Senate referred it to yet another committee. So we're back to where we were in 2015, 2016. But the report of that, those Senate committee hearings are getting shorter and shorter. This one's due on the 20th of March. So that's what happens from there.
Well, you've made that sound not that complicated, Lisa. It's felt very complicated throughout the week, but you've done a good job there.
Good. Phew. Of course, you know, people that are more politically aware than me will say, no, no, that's not what happened. But that's what I understood to be.
I think that's a great, and not to mention, because we haven't got this on our list tonight, but we'll get it on there, is a great piece, a European piece in the Sydney Morning Herald, which actually did summarise quite a lot of that, and Liam's piece, which we will refer to later, which summarised it as well. So two great pieces that everybody must read in order to grow their understanding.
Not that we're flogging our own stuff, but yeah.
No, I'm flogging your stuff. It's okay.
Oh, okay. That makes it better.
So I think the first thing we need to discuss, which is the big difference between when we've talked about this package in the past, is this idea of creating this omnibus bill, so linking the early childhood reforms they're trying to get through to a whole range of other methods, other measures, including New Start, including paid parental leave, and including further changes to the family tax benefit. So basically saying, this is all one big thing, take it or leave it. I guess it's hard to know where to start on that beyond, maybe let's go politically before we get from an early education perspective. I mean, for me, this seemed like this bill was already in trouble. It had been sitting in, you know, in Senate committees and Senate inquiries for years because the Senate didn't like it. They didn't like it before the election. They didn't like it after. How on earth did they think that adding all this extra complexity to it was then going to encourage people to vote for it? I mean,
I thought I must have been naive, not understand that they would put it all together, because then it just seemed like it would never, ever go through. But then there were some little kind of, it seemed at one stage that it was going to, and that it was all going to happen. And so I don't think I understand this approach well enough either, in actual fact. And yeah.
Yeah, look, I think it's primarily around being able to carry a line politically that Labor are holding families to ransom by not giving them childcare relief. I think that's what it, most of it is about, by saying that Labor is holding up families' childcare relief.
I think you also, when we were chatting a bit earlier, Lisa, I think you also suggested that it was because, I mean, some of these things they're trying to get through on top of the early childhood stuff are stuff that's been kicking around since Tony Abbott, since that, you know, the infamous 2014 budget. You were thinking that this was just, bluntly, this was just a sneaky way to try and get some of these through.
Oh, for sure, yeah. Like, there's probably measures in there. It's a huge bill, so there's probably measures in there that even now we don't know. I tried to read just the childcare part of it today and just my eyes started to glaze over, you know, because there's so much hidden in there and whatever. And I couldn't even begin to compare it to the last two times the bill has come up. So, you know, I pity the poor crossbenchers who don't have staff to do that kind of stuff for them.
Yeah, which is the people they need on side to get it passed. Because you're right, this bill is now insanely complex. It is impossible for anyone. It's insane for a casual observer to follow, let alone someone who is then having to vote for it. It's one of the more bizarre things I've ever seen, and I don't know politically what they were thinking. Maybe Corey Bernardi's exit flummoxed them or something, and they all got a bit confused.
Maybe.
So I guess I want to circle back to that link between these various things, because I've got some thoughts on them from an advocate's perspective later on, but it's probably worth reiterating. I mean, anyone who's listened to this podcast for a while, and anyone who reads any of our stuff outside this podcast, will know fairly well our position on it, but I think it's worth restating again exactly why, I'm not to speak for all three of us, but I'm fairly confident why we think this bill, as it stands, should not be passed. And I mean, did you, maybe Leanne, did you want to start in terms of your, what's, you know, your big concerns about this package?
Well, I think they're the concerns that we all share. And I guess the bigger picture for me is that if it's not good for children, then we really don't, I mean, regardless of all the nuances and all of the things that are going to create better streamlining and an increase in subsidies, the bottom line is if it's not good for children, then really we can't get on board with it. It's a compromise. And there's things like the cuts to the budget-based funded services. There's the activity test, which will mean that some children are excluded. The most disadvantaged children will be not necessarily excluded, but have their days reduced below what we consider to be a reasonable level of early childhood education. And so that wherever we're making that compromise, I guess that the big concern is that if it's not good for children, then it's not good for anybody.
Yay.
Well
absolutely.
Done.
Absolutely.
I was going to give you that, Leanne, because Lisa and I both managed to sort of get keyboard to computer this week and have ours sort of in black and white, so I wanted to make sure you had the chance to clearly articulate yours as well.
Thank you, Leanne. Well, yes, you were both very articulate. I felt like I had to catch up, but you've given me a great opportunity there, so I appreciate that.
Yeah, and I think the thing that's become crystal clear to me over the last couple of days, as well as the specific issues I have with the package and have had from day one, is the philosophical issue with this package for me is that is the fundamental enmeshing of children's right to participate in early childhood education with the welfare system. So it's basically saying, and there was a very telling interview with Christian Porter, who's the social services minister, who has now been dragged into this because he's trying to get through his tax benefit changes. Actually, no, I could be wrong. So it may have been Simon Birmingham. There's been so much happening. But they used the phrase, we want to make sure funding for childcare goes to the right parents. And that is so telling. And I tweeted it out straight away after I'd finished shaking. And that is the philosophical view of this government. And it is a phrase that we as advocates should not ignore. Because what he is saying is there are families and therefore children who are deserving of early childhood education and those who are not, that there are families with the temerity to not have a job and not be contributing to this country's productivity.
Hang on, Liam. I agree that that's absolutely appalling, but remember that they don't think of this as early education. They think of it as childcare. They think of it as caring for children to enable their parents to be earning money for the country.
Yeah, they're wrong.
Yeah.
And in that same interview, Malcolm Turnbull said this is a very big social reform. Like, he really sort of put that out there. And actually, I'm just thinking about that in the context of what you're saying, and I'm thinking, yes, that is very big social engineering, isn't it? Because that's exactly what it is. And when you look back at what this was supposed to be all about, which it came from the productivity inquiry, this was never what that inquiry was about, and yet the outcome is so, well, I shouldn't say this is never what it was about. It was about workforce, we know that, but it was in equal parts about early childhood education, and somewhere along the way, it's just been squeezed and squeezed and squeezed so that it doesn't even look like something that would have come out of any kind of inquiry at all.
And you know why I think that is? I think it's when we did that little kind of, we were removed from the education department, went over to Social Security. Scott Morrison was there. Scott Morrison likes cutting things. Therefore, you know, there was a lot of stuff here that he thought he could cut. And then, then when we were moved back, he as treasurer still has that idea of we need to cut. We need to cut.
Mm. Yeah, because it was significantly changed during his time. The draft looked different, and you're right. It's just a complete sort of change in that through someone's ideological lens.
And I think as I was sort of saying, it's crystallised for me that there are a lot of aims for our advocacy. What we have to do is really tricky and complex. What's become clear to me over the last 2 days is one of our advocacy aims has to be the complete uncoupling of early childhood education from the welfare system. It has to be completely separated, or we're not going to get anywhere, because conservative mindsets, and particularly conservative governments, will, if that cannot be completely separated out in law, in legislation, we will always be having these arguments and discussions, because it becomes about how much money goes into people's pockets and not how do we get more children into early childhood education.
That is a really difficult thing too, Liam, because quite often we use early childhood education as the difference, well, we do use it as the difference that we can make to children's lives so that they're not in the welfare system. So I think that's a really big challenge.
Yeah, it is. But it's one that's been successfully accomplished. Like, it can be done. And often, unfortunately, the best way to do it is to do it from the ground up, which is what a lot of the countries that do this successfully do. It is very difficult to unpick a system. You know, as Kate Ellis was saying in her press cop last year, it's once a system's in place, it's incredibly hard to unpick it. But I think this is it's going to be a fundamental pivot point for the future of the early childhood sector. Is can we move away from a funding model that is primarily based on welfare and is tied to you know the roster of a child's parent? It should be about the child, separate from the work arrangement of their family.
For sure.
Yeah.
I've got a few things that I really object to about the package on top of what it does for children. And I haven't had a chance to kind of say them in any forum yet. So I might just quickly run through them.
Go for it here, Lisa. Okay. This is a safe space.
Okay. okay. One of them is the complexity of it. It's being sold as, you know, no more CCB and CCR, but it's so complex in the application of the activity test, which means that if you are doing under 8 hours, then unless you're very low income, you're not eligible for any subsidies. So those families where one parent works, the other parent doesn't work or study or volunteer or anything, they will no longer be eligible. Then you've got the 8 to 16 hours, and they're up to, they're allowed 36 hours of paid childcare a fortnight. So that means that, you know, if they've got their children in 3 days of long daycare a week, then 1 week they'll be eligible for funded childcare, the other week they won't. You know, it keeps going. So it's really, really complex. And the amount of new kind of things that they've had to put in it to accommodate with that complexity will just make administering a childcare centre and working out what people's fees are and parents understanding how their fees were calculated just kind of like pretty horrible, you know. The other thing is that it's being sold to parents as, you know, hey, you're going to get, you know, there's going to be no cap that, you know, the $7,500 funding cap won't be there anymore. And yet that is really, really complex. So that, look, I can't even begin to explain it in words because it's so complex, but there'll be no annual cap for families earning less than $185,000. Families over $185,000 will have a cap of $10,000, right? Okay, so there is no cap for, you know, quite a number of families. But how the fees actually, or how the subsidy works, is that you get between, depending upon your income, between 50 and 85% of the actual fee subsidised, but up to an hourly cap. So that if, that, say for long daycare, the hourly cap is $11.55. So if your childcare service charges $11.55, then you get between either 50% or 85% of that $11.55 subsidised. But if your service charges, say, $150 per day or $15 per hour, then you can see that at, you know, 50% of that cap, you'll only be getting about $5.25 out of a $15 per hour fee. Does that make sense? It's really hard to do in words that aren't written, but essentially there's a cap not on what services can charge, but on the amount that the subsidy will be calculated in.
Yes. So there will be a gap.
Yeah, and there'll be a gap, you know, for some people that'll be a lot more than others. So whether or not there's a $10,000 cap on subsidy or not doesn't really matter because there's all these other caps that are in there. The other thing is how they're dealing with allowable absences is a lot different. And the other thing that, you know, like that concerns me is that so much of this act is referred to what's called minister's rules or the secretary's rules.
Yeah, I was going to bring
so
this up.
So basically there's so much we do not know what's actually there. It's all, you know, the parliament is actually, by approving this, by, you know, passing it, they'll be giving the minister, who at the moment is Simon Birmingham, or the secretary of the department, enormous, you know, power to make decisions about who is eligible for things, rather than the power than the parliament having that that power.
And there was some consultation on those rules too, Lisa, but it was you know, one of those sort of very private consultations that lots of people were invited to, but you couldn't take anything away and you couldn't, you weren't allowed to remember anything.
And there were there were specific non-disclosure agreements.
Yeah. It was the complexity there, again, more of that complexity that you're describing. So it was easy to forget everything.
Thanks for bringing that up, Lisa. There's probably only two other things I wanted to raise just in terms of why this package is so bad, because I feel like we do need to. I actually feel like, and then the reason I wrote a lot about it this week is that I'm really worried about this being passed, and I'm really worried that the sector doesn't A, understand what is actually on the table here, and B, are not standing up enough. The two things following on from you, Lisa, this idea of the minister's rules, the most recent Senate inquiry report revealed that there were 70 separate rules, or another word I now can't remember, or sort of items of this legislation that were entirely, there was no information about, and they were entirely at the discretion of the minister. 70. I'm going to say it again, 70. So for anyone advocating for the passing of this package, what they are saying is they are satisfied that the current Conservative government that is currently floating this package, which is entirely structured around parents working and not children's right to education, they're saying, "Oh, I'm sure they'll do a good job." Like that's what they're assuming. That to me is naivety of the highest caliber. And anyone who thinks that's okay wouldn't be acceptable in any other piece of legislation. And any other piece of legislation the government took seriously, that would be legislated, and it would be really clear. We are taking a huge gamble that they will decide out of the goodness of their hearts that they will take care of vulnerable children. And that to me is just is foolish. It is.
And yeah, when you talk about vulnerable children too, that's one of the things where that has been changed enormously, and a lot of this is still up to a minister's rules or secretary's rules. But things like how a child that is at risk will get access to additional childcare subsidy, which is the equivalent of special CCB at the moment, is up to minister's rules. So we don't yet know how those children will get access to basically free childcare. We don't know how we may know, sorry, as well as the ones that we don't know about, the complexity of the access to additional childcare subsidy. I tried to read that today and it's really scary. It's things like, a child at risk can only be approved by a service for 6 weeks, and after that, it gets referred to the department. Grandparents, whether grandparents can get the equivalent of their current grandparents' CCB, all of that has changed. So think about all those, all those people that currently get special CCB, and then go and read the section of the bill that's about additional childcare subsidy, and see the changes that it will put on your how you operate. And it seems like a lot of that is now will now be have to be referred and decided by the department. And they've got something like 6 weeks to make those decisions. And in those 6 weeks, you're not getting money in for those children. You're not sure if those children will be covered by that additional subsidy. Yeah, pretty
And
scary
that,
stuff.
and it's an administrative issue there, because we know that it's not, as you say, it's not going to be fast. But the problem with this is that it's trying to retrofit the system, because there has been fraudulent activity around that particular part of the system. So instead of addressing those that obviously are identifying in that fraudulent way, which is easy to identify because there's a repeated abuse of that particular drawing on that subsidy, it's creating a whole new world for everybody, and everybody will be a proportion of the sector will be disadvantaged.
And hey, it's creating a whole new world for everyone at the same time as there's no professional support coordinators or anyone to explain it to the sector. So, okay, let's presume what happens. Let's presume that it goes it that it'll you know that it gets passed. They will then employ the department will then have to employ some organisation to try and, provide professional development for services about it. And it'll be, it'll be very short and sweet, and people won't have that opportunity that they had with other things like the National Quality Framework or other changes of that, or the Early Years Learning Framework, to question and to ask and have repeated professional development around it. So it's going to be a bit of a nightmare.
All this to look forward to. Yes. I think it's worth moving on now to where the sector as a whole sits with this package, I guess. And this is where, as I told Leanne and Lisa beforehand, I'm going to have to be very restrained about my views on this, because I do have some pretty strong views. They are my views, and I'm sure I'll be offending a variety of people, as I usually do whenever I get in front of a microphone or get behind a keyboard. I'll go first, if that's okay, and I want to be really clear, it is my specific view. Early childhood advocacy is in crisis, and the last 2 days have demonstrated that. I am very surprised that there are still prominent organisations who are apparently advocating for children, still saying this package is largely good with a few amendments. That position to me is no longer tenable. Let's look at what happened over the last 2 days. This package has been horse traded to within an inch of its life. Paid parental leave has been chucked onto it. New Start has been chucked onto it. A whole range of, we will fiddle with this, we will trim this. What's the one aspect of it that no one has raised a word about? Anything to children. Do with children. Yep, anything to do with children. If our advocacy had been successful, so putting on my positive hat and assuming that I'm a crazy lone voice who is not in the tent, I don't know the conversations people are having, which may very well be true. I'm in a position where I can be. I have no one to report to in this position. I will have my view. I don't have to front up to it to anyone. Let's assume that a lot of these large organisations have been meeting with ministers, have been meeting with politicians. What has that got us? Over the last 2 days, there has not been a single discussion point about maybe we need to look at the activity test. Maybe we need to look at the childcare safety net. Maybe we need to look at guaranteed access for Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander children. Not a single word. That, to me, is a failure. And I don't blame a specific person for it. The sector is fragmented. This is an incredibly complex piece of legislation we are debating. But we need to front up and admit that's not good enough. I add myself into it as well. I have been public. I have written a lot. I have spoken a lot. Clearly that has not had an impact either. So I need to reflect on that for myself. But we need to seriously have a look at ourselves. A, that this package became very close to being passed into legislation over the last 2 days. It's now been put off to at least March. It may very well pass there again with no substantive amendments to improve this for children. And I think we need to have a really difficult discussion about refining our advocacy to be clear that we advocate for children and not necessarily for families where those don't align. We shouldn't be getting into discussions about
For services as well.
Or necessarily for services, yeah, possibly. This should not be about the amount of family tax benefit that is or isn't going to be received. It shouldn't necessarily be about specific planning for services. If we cannot get past the first hurdle for me is this good for children? If our advocacy cannot get past that point, the rest of it is irrelevant to me. And we have been bogged down in discussions about, well, let's taper this and let's change the thing on this. No. If this package proposes in any way the things it is proposing, which is the closure of BBF services and the restriction of access to vulnerable children, it should be a deal breaker. It should be an absolute no from anyone involved in advocacy for children. And anyone who has been working to get this package passed, I would seriously urge them to consider where their advocacy lies and maybe advocating for a different organisation.
Well, okay. Liam, I've got to say, I absolutely admire your passion about this, and I think that comes from really wanting to advocate for children, and I don't think, I think Leanne and I share that passion for wanting to advocate for children. I want to talk about one specific thing, which is the 12 hours or 15 hours. So remember that that currently, under the existing rules, every child in Australia is eligible for 24 hours of funded early education and care a week. So no matter what your parents do, you get 24 hours. If your parents work, then you can, it can go up to 50 hours a week. Under this package, you'll get 12 hours a fortnight. What, how the minister and the government sees that is you get 2 6-hour slots of care, right? 2 6-hour slots, so 2 6-hour days. Like, children go to school for 6 hours a day, so therefore they can get 2 6-hour days of early education and care. But we know that that's not how long daycare works. Long daycare centres are open for 10 hours minimum, yeah, sometimes 11 hours. So what that means is those children whose parents are not working, who are on the lowest income, will only be eligible for 1 day of long daycare a week, 2 days a fortnight. Now, as we all know, that isn't enough for children. It's really disruptive to have a child, you know, really disruptive to the child to be in long daycare 1 day a week. So the minister is hoping that services will either change how they offer their time, you know, so that they're offering 6 hour blocks to enable a child to have 2 6-hour blocks a day. They're viewing it, Scott Morrison in particular is viewing it as, why should we pay for hours that children are not there? So they think, you know, look, it's a, you know, a child may only be at a long daycare service for 8 hours, but we're paying for a whole, you know, 10 or 11 hours that that service is open. Now, that's a ridiculous argument, but I don't want to go there. Where I want to go is that, you know, if you pick up any media from the last week, you'll find at the end of the story a caption saying, you know, a paragraph saying the early childhood sector is pushing the minister to expand this from 12 hours a fortnight to 15 hours, 12 hours a week to 15 hours a week. Now, that still isn't enough to get 2 days of long daycare, but somehow the entire lobbying advocacy organisations within the early childhood sector has decided that they may be able to get that past the minister. And I'm fairly certain that in the next few weeks he will say, you know, that that's what's happened, that it's gone up to 15 hours. And then everyone will go, oh, okay, well, that's great. No, it's not great. Children currently get 24 hours.
It's not good.
That, you know, means they at least get 2 days. 15 hours isn't enough to give children 2 days.
And so it's just not what the research tells us is good for them. So when we talk about evidence-based practice, there's no evidence. There's no evidence to say that that lower level of early childhood education is going to be okay. And if we had a system that actually gave every child their early childhood education for free, doesn't matter who does it, whether the state funds it or whether the Commonwealth funds it, then we wouldn't be in this difficult problem where all of the workforce issues are tied up with the early childhood education.
Yep.
Yep. I don't know. I'm feeling really tired this week about this stuff. The Jobs for Families package has been around for a long time, and it feels like it's coming to a crunch. And I'm concerned that as a sector, when we look at what's happening internationally, when we look, the Conservative government in the United Kingdom, David Cameron, when he was Prime Minister, approved funding for free early childhood education for two-year-olds, for vulnerable children. And we are having this argument and discussion about how much of a family tax benefit welfare payment we can do to throw some measly few hours to vulnerable children. And the fact that alone, the cuts to budget-based funded services, that at a time when we laughed about New Zealand hitting 96% in their preschool attendance, Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander children couldn't meet the target for closing the gap last time. The target was 95%, I think, and they reached 85% by some standards. And we are talking seriously about closing budget-based funded services, and that 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 is not a line in the sand for the sector, that sector leaders are not standing up and going, that is unacceptable and we will not support this package until it changes, based on, I don't know, some desire to stay in the tent, some desire to work within the system, which I understand. And again, completely understand, I have the luxury of not having to worry about that. But it is, to me, it's a crisis in our advocacy. And until we can work out a way that we can either unify, which is going to be really tricky. The sector is now flooded with private operators. It is now flooded with, you know, organisations who, as well as, you know, when I'm feeling positive, as well as balancing what I'm sure is fundamental respect for children, also balancing making enormous profits, we are at serious risk of things getting far worse for children accessing early childhood education than far better.
And Liam, that's exactly what you're saying, is what it's come down to is about who pays. That's really what the argument is. That's where all of the, you know, all of the nuanced sort of twists and turns and all of this is who's going to pay for this. And I think that from my perspective, it's not the sector's job to work out who pays, because there are lots and lots of brilliant people, economists and finance people and all of those people in government who can work that out. Perhaps maybe looking at travel allowances for MPs might find a bit of space there to pay for it. The job of the sector is to work out what's best for children.
Yeah.
So if we maybe just stuck to our jobs...
Okay, let me just give you what the opposition side of that would be. There would be some people in the sector who would say, that's naive.
I know it's naive.
They would say that this package brings a lot more money into the sector, and they would say that we have to do whatever we can to get it passed because we need that money in the sector. What would you say to that?
Well, I know it's naive, unless you are not the first person to say that I'm naive.
I'm not saying you're naive. I'm saying that people would say all three of us are naive.
I know. And I hear what you're saying, because you're right, it brings more money into the sector. But what sector are you talking about? What part of the sector is this going to bring more money into? Yeah, and where else could that money come from?
And, you know, I was thinking about this today, and I was thinking that that is kind of like really what it comes down to. We now have a fairly strong advocacy group for parents called the Parenthood, right? Do we have a separate advocacy group for children and for the education and care sector? Or has it morphed into the one body? And is it possible to do, you know, to advocate for both of those groups simultaneously? Or does sometimes what's good for the sector is not good for children?
Yeah, I think that they're really good questions. And I think that the model of advocacy maybe that we subscribe to is not... It doesn't work in the sector anymore. You can actually cut that out if you like, Liam. Do those things to still have some confluence? And is it that the sector has changed so much that the way that organisations work and the structure of peaks and advocacy groups does not work anymore?
I think it needs to be a discussion, because I'm really worried we've come to this point. The other thing I would say, Lisa, just to answer your question quickly, and then we need to move on, or we're going to risk going over our hour limit that we try and set ourselves, is that question to me is, it's a distraction. This can work. We know it can work. It works internationally. There is Australian research that says how to fund this stuff. There's a PricewaterhouseCoopers did a full look at this, and they said this can work much better. My view is Leanne's entirely right. We should be advocating for, this is what it should look like. Here's some ways to do it. That's not actually our problem. like we are here to advocate for children. A fantastic example of this, which is going to segue into just our last point for this one, is what can advocates do? And I know, Leanne, you're going to talk about some fantastic international advocacy, but I'm going to point to Australia. We look at
Before we can go to what can advocates do, can we have a look at what might actually happen? Because I've spent some time looking at that today in terms of who's who in the Senate and what might happen.
Would you want to leave that for the end? Because that might be a good place to finish, which might remind everyone why they should potentially be opposing it. Is that all right?
For sure.
Because I just want to quickly say, because that is a charge that is thrown at me quite a lot, and I take it. I write about this stuff publicly, and I'm often told I'm naive. I'm also often told I'm quite rude and don't know what I'm talking about, which is fine again. You look at organisations like in Australia, like ACOS, who, by the way, had a public statement about these bill changes far before any early childhood organisation. They run fierce and frank advocacy on all their issues. We go back to 2014 with Tony Abbott's ridiculous budget. They led the charge against this. They didn't go, well, let's see if we can work with the government to make things a bit better. No, they said, this is not good enough and you will stop. And guess what? Half of those measures have not passed because an advocacy group didn't try to do things it wasn't designed to, which was help governments out. They did their job. They're an advocacy group. They will say, here are our positions. Here is what we say is best for the people we work with, in this case, the community sector. And these measures don't pass the cut the mustard. Try again. That, to me, is a model for early childhood advocacy in Australia, where we don't try and work with what is a bad package. It is a bad package. We don't try and make it better for them. That's not our job. We say it's not good enough, and we tell them to go back and fix it.
Yep.
Yes, agreed. And ACOS does some fantastic work in partnership with government as well.
Yeah.
So maybe there is some orientation around issues there. If something's not okay, then just stand up and say it's not okay. And then on the other things that are okay, work hand in hand.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think you wanted to talk a bit about some advocacy internationally, Leanne.
I don't want to divert from the topic, but I'll just quickly talk about this and then we can move back to what you can actually do about the legislation. But this is from the National Association for the Education of Young Children, and obviously they're based in the States, and obviously there is a lot of stuff happening in the States around inclusion or not inclusion, and lots of executive orders that are really dividing the country. And NAYC put out a statement, and basically it is saying we are going to continue to work with our commitment to children, and we're going to work diligently to advance early childhood education and move it forward regardless of these things that are happening. And I just thought it was a really powerful statement, and we'll put that up on the we'll put it up so you can read it. But I thought that the last paragraph was so beautifully put, and I'll just quickly read that. We believe in working across ideological, linguistic, cultural, religious and geographical differences to move early childhood education forward at the federal, state and local levels. Indeed, it is these very differences that define our field, mark the lives of our youngest children and contribute to the richness of our nation. And they are assets we will continue to celebrate, value and uphold. We encourage you to support and advocate for all the children, families and educators in your community today and every day, so that together we can continue to work towards ensuring that all children have access to high quality early learning supported by an effective and diverse profession. And I just thought that they, throughout this piece, they just stated exactly what the problem was with all of the changes that are coming under Trump. There we go. We've mentioned him now, Liam, so you can relax. But they put it out there and they said that they were going to support, they were going to advocate, and it was all about children, families and educators. And so there's an organisation that's successfully combining those things. But I guess it's stating it, saying what they're going to do about it and encouraging people to really act and be advocates and not to be afraid of that advocacy role that you play. I loved it.
Fantastic. So, Lisa, do you want to give us your take on what you think this may shake up as looking like, what's likely to happen over the next little while?
Yeah, so look, very quickly, I think, as I've already said, I think that The minister may change the hours in funded care to 15 hours. And I think that when it comes back from the Senate report, I think in the Senate report you'll have the same as you've had all the other time. You'll have a dissenting report from Greens and Labor, and everyone else will, or basically the coalition people will say, yay, Senate should approve the, should pass the legislation. But then that's where it gets interesting. So at the moment, we've got 29 coalition members in the Senate. We've got 26 Labor and 9 Greens. So that gives them a total of 35. So we need at least 7 crossbenchers and possibly up to 10 crossbenchers to get this passed. So let's look, let's presume that a few of them aren't going to vote for a minute, or, you know, don't give it, or they're each going to go half-half. Who have we got? We've got One Nation, which has got 4 votes. Now, One Nation wants to rein in spending, and Pauline only got $8 a week when she was had children, so she doesn't really want to pay for childcare. So One Nation is probably, you know, not that keen on voting for a bill that gives people more childcare money. The Xenophon team, they've got 3 people. They said that, you know, they didn't like the previous versions because of the cuts to fringe benefit tax. But this time, Senator Xenophon has said that the changes to the legislation to the FBT was a step in the right direction. Jackie Lambie has got 1, and she said no to fringe benefit tax before. David Layenham, our favourite, he said that the government should not provide any taxpayer support to breeders. Obviously, he wants to fund the gay population more. And Darren Hinch, who knows, not really a big childcare fan, I think. And Corey Bernardi, I think he's more likely to be out because really, women should just be pregnant and barefoot in the kitchen. So who does that mean out of those people that the government could persuade? I think they're going for One Nation and the Xenophon team to pass it, and it looks like the Xenophon team may be teetering on the edge of saying okay, and One Nation, if they're bribed enough with whatever it is that they want at the moment, they will also do. So if they get those 7 to pass, then possibly, and Corey Bernardi, then possibly it'll go through.
So what does that, so Lisa, your helpful guidance now for everybody who's listening about what they should do, who they should lobby.
They need to lobby primarily, I think, Nick Xenophon.
Yeah.
Okay. If they don't want this to go through, then they need to, yeah, to lobby him. And I think we just need to say one more thing. Like, people say, well, look, I don't like what you're saying will happen to Aboriginal children, or, you know, families, you know, that aren't eligible for more than 12 hours of fortnight of care, 12 hours a week of care. But I do want more money in the system. Why should we oppose it? And I think that comes down again to, you can't support it if you support children. So if you want to support children, you've got to oppose this bill. If you want to oppose this bill, you do it via contacting the Nick Xenophon team. Maybe we can put a link to their email on the run sheet on the on the website, and so that people can contact him and say, we don't want you to approve it for these reasons.
All right, thank you both for going through that. God, we love talking about the Jobs for Families package, don't we? But, agree with us or disagree with us, and there are a lot of people out there who disagree with us, please at least look at the things we've raised and decide for yourself whether they're things you can support or not. And as Lisa says, if you don't, we need you to do something about it. So what we'll try and do now is whip through as quickly as possible, because I think we're already over our hour limit, is whip through our recommendations for the week. So do you want to kick us off, Leanne?
Yes, I will. My one is actually quite a long one. So people, you might need a bit of a sort of long cup of tea for this. But it's basically a report that is called The Meeting of Experts on Policy Guidelines on the Promotion of Decent Work for Early Childhood Education Personnel.
And are you doing your PhD, Leanne?
I must say it's a bit of a cheat one, because it was something, a focus on some leadership reading that I had been doing. But what I loved about this was the mention of it being decent work for early childhood. I loved it. And if you get a chance to have a look at it, even just if you look at the components of it that relate to good professional learning, decent wages, good leadership, all of these wonderful things that are fantastic components that come together to provide an excellent system. I think it's worth just having a look at that to reiterate the points that this is a profession that needs to be better remunerated, better developed, and better led.
Fantastic. Full stop. Thanks, Leanne.
Fair enough.
What about you, Lisa?
Look, I'm recommending something that Liam doesn't want me to recommend. I'm recommending Liam's blog piece that he wrote this week about the Jobs for Families package, not just because it's got a gorgeous photo of a child and a teddy bear at the top of it. Is that your child, Liam, or is it stock photography?
Stock photography. I really wanted to get that one with the child crawling over the coloured foam blocks, but I couldn't find it.
Just to piss me off.
Lisa's favourite.
look, no, but the reason I'm recommending this is for two reasons. One is that Liam is an educator. Well, he's not anymore. He's kind of a manager of educators. But Liam writes these things not for money, for nothing else other than, you know, to try and get the message out there that he thinks needs to get out there. He's incredibly articulate, and he's just got it really clearly as to why the package should be opposed. So if you look at our long list of news items this week and go, oh my God, I can't possibly read that, then just click to Liam's, have a look at that and go from there.
Thank you, Lisa. Yeah. Moving swiftly along, my recommendation is from NPR in the US. So I think it's just interesting. It's a bit, it's obviously not in Australia and a little separate from early childhood education, but it's interesting. So the Donald Trump, the way the American system works is the president can appoint basically heads of all these of various departments in the US. So whereas here, sort of ministers come from the party and they're elected, the president can appoint whoever the hell they want to lead, say, the education department in this case. And they're basically confirmed by the Senate. So there are hearings, people say, are you any good, blah, 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 blah. They have been, all of Trump's picks have been controversial for one reason or another, but I find it really interesting that the one that got the closest to being voted down was Betsy DeVos, who was being put up as the education secretary, or the basically the minister for education in the US. I'm not going to go into, because we're running out of time, but she basically, Vice President Mike Pence had to come in and cast a vote to ensure she got nominated. I think it's really interesting that for everything else that's going on, it was the education department one that was the most controversial and most tricky. So I'll include a link there to say why that was so controversial and tricky, but I think that speaks to how seriously we need to take education, both internationally and overseas. Both internationally and here, because internationally is overseas. I'm going to do a couple of quick shout-outs. Just a reminder, we had a bonus episode come out earlier in the week where I got to have a quick interview with the Minister for Children and Families in Victoria, Jenny Makarkos. So thanks, Minister Makarkos, for letting me have a chat with her and record that and put that out on Monday. So if you haven't had a chance to look at that one, go back and listen. It's quite interesting. Just a reminder, we're now on Patreon. So if you want to continue supporting the show and seeing we can do lots of and helping us do lots of more fun things throughout the year, just head to patreon.com/early. Edge Ishlo. We really value and appreciate anyone who helps us out. If you can't do that, which I fully understand, it'd be great if you could give us a review on iTunes. So we had two fantastic reviews from Alison Caskelly and Liz Saratelli. I won't have time to go through them, unfortunately, but you can check them out on the iTunes page. We really appreciate those ratings and reviews. As I always say, just help other professionals find the podcast in the iTunes store. So thank you very much to Alison and Liz. And we also want to say a big thanks to Bronwyn O'Hines. I hope it's Hines or Hines. I haven't actually heard her surname pronounced, but she gave us a shout out in her article in The Conversation as one of the podcasts in 2017 to look out to. So Bronwyn, we thank you very much. That we were all sort of blushing mad.
You mean we got into Leanne's favorite magazine, journal?
Is your head exploded?
I can't believe I didn't make that my recommendation this week. That would have been such a great thing.
And I will say, Bronwyn's nailed it. So she describes this as having just the right amount of disagreement, self-deprecation, irony, and humour, which sounds just about right. Probably she's forgotten madness, but apart from that, she's about right.
Definitely the disagreement. Self-deprecation? Maybe that's you, Liam.
Maybe possibly.
Maybe friendless as well. Friendless too.
Yeah. Thank you to everyone for sticking with us this week. This is a really important discussion to have. Agree with us, disagree with us as much as you like, of course, but this is a discussion the sector needs to be having, and we will absolutely be continuing to have it. So thank you all for sticking with us for the hour plus you've had to listen to us go on and on. But we'll be back next week. So until then, you can find the show on Facebook and Twitter at Early Edu Show. You can also find us all individually. I'm at Liam McNicholas on Twitter.
I'm Lisa J. Bryant at Twitter.
And I'm Leanne M. Gibbs 3.
And until next week, thank you all very much. Have a great week. Stay out of the heat. It's bye from me.
And me.
And me.